Welcome to the Live Your Life podcast, episode number 12. In this episode, my guest is one of my best friends, Marcus. And in 2015, Marcus and I hiked 500 miles across Spain on El Camino de Santiago. The name of this podcast is Live Your Life, and this journey is one of the foundational experiences I have that helped me understand what it means to truly live my life. We went through some experiences that were incredibly difficult, and we also went through some experiences that were incredibly rewarding. We learned so much about ourselves. We showed up in this experience, and it was painful at times, but we realized how powerful we really are and what really matters in life. So stay tuned for our story of El Camino de Santiago. Everything expressed in the Live Your Life podcast is either my opinion or the opinion of my guest, and this is not a replacement for healthcare services. If you find yourself in need of therapy or other healthcare services, please seek out resources for that. I'm Jasmine Savari, and welcome to the Live Your Life podcast. As a coach with a master's degree in psychology, I know that so many of us are missing the authentic experience of truly living our lives. I want to inspire you with conversations that expand your consciousness and empower you to create the best life possible. Let's start living now, because now is all we have. Hi, Marcus. Welcome to the Live Your Life podcast.
Hi, Jasmine. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so you guys, today we have something really exciting that we're going to talk about. So Marcus and I, in 2015, went on probably one of the greatest adventures of my life so far in so many ways. It was El Camino de Santiago, which is a 500-mile trek from France to Spain that you hike. So I'll say, I guess, a little bit about let's talk about our history a little bit. So Marcus, why don't you say a little bit about who you are? Like, what's your deal? What do you do? Who are you?
My name is Marcus Reynolds. I originally am from Seattle, where I met Jasmine probably 18 years ago-ish. We've known each other a very long time. I left Seattle in 2006 and moved to California, and I've been down here, I guess, close to 12 years now.
I cannot believe it was 2006. I feel like I was still in high school, but I wasn't. But yeah, you've been gone for a long time.
Yeah, but we've been traveling a lot together, and this was probably one of the best traveling experiences of my life.
Probably.
I mean, we've been on a lot together. I mean, we went back to Europe afterwards and got to go to, I don't even know how many countries. We did, 14 countries when we went back?
I don't know, something ridiculous. Then we went to Hawaii back in November, and that was like amazing. That was ridiculous. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've done a lot. So you live in LA. What do you do in LA?
I'm a fashion designer in Los Angeles, and I've been doing that for about 3 years now. I graduated with my second degree in fashion design, and that's why I got to go on the Camino with Jasmine back in 2015, because I was in college again, and we went in the summertime, and we went for 6 weeks, which is something that a lot of people aren't able to do in today's busy lifestyle, is taking 6 weeks off of work or whatever your life is to go travel and do something amazing like the Camino.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, before the Camino, we would talk every once in a while, like when you came back to Seattle for holidays and stuff like that. And I think I came to visit, I saw you. Did I just come once to San Francisco? I remember we hung out when you lived there, but we went our separate ways for a few years. And I remember we were chatting before I went on the Camino, and I was like, hey, I'm going to do this. Like, do you want to come? Thinking like, there's no way that you could take 6 weeks and come with me. But I was like, you could come for like a week. And you were like, okay. And then you were like, actually, I can come for the whole time.
Well, I remember when you called me and you said, hey, I'm going to go to Spain. Do you want to come? And of course, Spain was on my list of places that I really wanted to visit. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And I said, how long are you going for? And you said 6 weeks. And at that point, I was like, wait, 6 weeks? And you said, yeah, I'm going to do this thing called the Camino de Santiago. Have you heard of it? And I said, no. And you said, please go watch this movie called The Way. I think it's by Emilio Estevez. And call me tomorrow. And I watched the movie and I called you the next day and I said, I want to come for the whole 6 weeks. I want to do that. It's amazing. So if you haven't seen the movie, it's really informative about what the Camino is and what it stands for.
Yeah, totally. And at that point, did you know, because you worked at a really nice hotel in Beverly Hills at that time, and they were going to be doing a remodel. Did you know at that point that the remodel was happening?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And it was perfect timing because they were trying to, you know, make everybody work less hours. And I said, can I take this time off? And they were like, absolutely, this is the perfect time. So I was able to do that. It was meant to be.
It was totally meant to be. I think it's important to say, like, you talked about your second college degree. What was your first degree?
My first degree I got at Seattle University. I have a pre-medicine biochemistry degree, and I was going to go into pharmacy school, and you know, that just wasn't the path that seemed right for me. And so I took about 10 years off, and then I decided to go back to school for fashion design and be a creative person, which is what I've always wanted to do. So
it's so awesome.
I just left that in the dust, but I learned a lot about science.
Yeah. So if anybody needs any like fancy dresses designed by anybody, I can highly recommend Marcus for that. I've seen him make amazing dresses. So let's go back a little bit to like our history. So we met back in, I think we were 18, because I know when we were 19, we would go up to Canada all the time to party. And so I'm pretty sure we were like 18 when we met, which like we're coming up on 20 years, which is so crazy. And we actually met through, at the time, one of my best friends like worked at a coffee shop with you, and I met you and I was like, he's mine.
Yeah, we met through a mutual friend of ours
who
moved away. And after she moved, I think, to Texas, was when we started hanging out all the time and we became besties.
Yeah, and we did a lot. Like we had quite a few adventures, actually. I don't even know how many times we went to Canada, but we did a lot of really fun stuff. So we've always had this like draw to like do exciting things and live life. There's definitely some stories that will not be shared on this podcast. I think Marcus probably knows more about me than anybody else. We will not talk about that. But we've had some fun. And I think especially since the Camino, which was 5 years ago, like we have done so much fun stuff. Like your favorite bus tour around Munich.
Oh my gosh, Munich, if you haven't been there, is one of the most amazing cities I've ever seen. I was asleep on the tour bus the whole time.
You loved it. And it was my second time. And I was like, Marcus, look at this. And you were like, ugh.
I was so tired from the night before.
Yeah.
I just slept through the whole tour.
We had just flown in from Nice, France, and we went to Monaco the day before that. And then we had been through, I mean, we started in Scotland, we went to London, and then we made our way down through, we went to so many countries, Switzerland, like we went to so many places on that trip. So we've had a lot of fun. And I think the Camino was like a huge spark for us to realize, I think we can talk a lot more about this as we keep going, but just like what really matters in life. And the Camino was not, it was unlike anything I could have ever imagined experiencing. And it was, I have chills like talking about it. It was like the most beautiful experience of my life, the most like unexpected. And it wasn't the things I thought would be important that were important. So, I mean, we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, they say the Camino is a spiritual journey for your soul, and everybody's journey is different. And that's completely true of the Camino. And it kind of shows you what you need to be shown or what you need to learn at the time that you're going. A lot of people make specific reasons for going. Maybe they're getting over something, or they need to think, they need to find themselves, they want to figure out who they are, what they want to do with their life, or they're going through a really hard time in their life and they just need to reset. So I think setting your intentions for the Camino and what you want to get out of it is different for everyone. And the Camino kind of gives you, each person, an individualized experience, really.
Yeah, totally. And interesting. Like, so one of my friends actually wrote a book about her experience on the Camino, which is how it was presented to me. And I love traveling. I've always loved traveling. And I think before, yeah, a couple years before this, I did some silent meditation retreats, and I've always been called to like experiences. And I was reading her book, and in her book, I think she had just gone through a breakup and she was trying to find herself. I don't even remember the storyline now because it's been so long. She ended up not publishing the book. She just wrote it for her own experience. And it was so amazing for me to read. And I don't believe it was an accident that I read it at this time. You know, I've talked in this podcast a little bit about going through a divorce, but this was 3 years before the end of my marriage. And there was a lot of soul searching going on for me at this time. There wasn't not a whole lot changed between this time and the time my marriage ended, but I was looking for something. I needed something to shift. My life was not going the way that I thought I wanted it to be going. I wasn't at peace. I wasn't happy. I felt that I put a lot of weight into like what society thought my life should look like. And I felt really lost and kind of empty. And I wanted to find myself. Like I wanted to have this empowering spiritual experience by myself. And that was my agenda. And that was my plan. Like I went on the Camino, like this is what I'm going to achieve here. This is what I'm doing. I had a really clear goal. And then when I invited you,
had no idea what was in store.
It's totally not like a contemplative. I mean, we've had a lot, like we talk about spirituality all the time now. Like, I feel like we've grown up so much, like we've totally grown up together. But, you know, on the Camino, I like had this agenda, this plan, and you are all about like having a good time and having fun. And I have chills again. It's like, I had this idea of what I wanted my experience to look like, and it did not look anything like I thought it would, but it ended up being everything that I needed, that I didn't know that I needed. So thank you for that, Marcus.
You're welcome. I feel like we had the best times, and we also had a lot of the worst times. And, you know, these hardships that you go through, you learn a lot about yourself and who you are, and a lot of them are just super crazy. I mean, we have some stories to tell you about some of the things that we experienced, but I mean, we'll never forget what happened.
Totally. I'm guessing that a lot of people listening to this, I know when we were like after the Camino, we would tell a bunch of people, and so many people didn't know what it was. So the Camino is, so it's a 500-mile pilgrimage, and do you want to say a little bit about what we're hiking to? Like, where are we going?
So we started in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port in France, which is just below the Pyrenees Mountains. And your very first day, you hike over these mountains. And from there, you go all the way across northern Spain, 500 miles to Santiago de Compostela. And then after that, you can keep going all the way to the coast called Finisterre. And that is where they say Columbus would stand, and he thought that was the edge of the world.
And there's a lot of different routes that go to Santiago. So they say St. James is buried in the cathedral at Santiago. So pilgrims come from all over the world. I know years later we went to visit a friend in Germany, and we walked on part of the Camino in Germany. And I think the one we went on starts up in Norway, I think, or something. And remember those ladies we met that had been, they were hiking for like 40 days already. Like they started way earlier in France. Like you can start.
They had hiked 500 miles prior to where we started. So they did about 1,000 miles.
Yeah. And you can do the Camino Norte, which goes the northern coast of Spain, or you can do the Portuguese route, which starts, I don't even know where it starts, but there's so many different ways and they all end in Santiago.
At the cathedral there.
Yeah, and it's a spiritual pilgrimage. Like they say miracles happen at the cathedral. So they say that the remains of St. James are buried under the cathedral. So that's what you're hiking to, trekking to.
Yeah, so this has been done for over 1,000 years, and the numbers have been increasing in the past probably 10 years. About 10 years ago, there was about 100,000 people that would do it a year. And now I think I read a statistic where it was over 300,000 people will do it every year.
Yeah. So you start the Camino, like I think this is the most traditional route that we started. So you start in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, which is France, which is this like amazing, like beautiful town. So even preparing for the Camino. So we had been both doing a bunch of reading. I got all my gear, and I remember flying down to LA for a weekend with you, and we went and we bought all of your gear, and then we both just did our training like separately, where you just put a bunch of weight in your pack and you just walk around where you live like with a bunch of weight, trying to get your body used to that experience, right?
And also break in your shoes.
Yeah, yeah. You would like walk down by the beach, and like I lived in kind of a nice neighborhood, and I remember how ridiculous I felt like walking. I felt like I looked homeless, even though I had like a brand new, you know, I have like this brand new, like brand name hiking gear on. It just was kind of a weird experience to be like, okay, today I'm just going to go walk 10 miles through like neighborhoods and put weight in my pack and just see how that felt. So it was, I don't even remember how much time we spent planning, but it was, I mean, it was just planning.
It was months.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also you have to get used to the fact that you, that's how you will be dressed in Spain, walking through these cities and towns, and people know who you are. You're a pilgrim. Yeah. And you show it. There's the symbol of the Camino, which is the shell.
Yeah.
And you usually wear a shell on your backpack, and it signals to everyone that you're a pilgrim and you're on your journey.
Yep.
And usually the whole country is super respectful of that, even when you are in a big city, wearing your trekking clothes and using your poles to walk.
Yeah. And so when you walk the Camino, the way that it works is there's yellow arrows. You're walking through like little medieval villages in Spain, and you just follow yellow arrows. You'll be walking and you'll see like a little arrow on the side of a building, and it tells you which way to go. Okay. So we prepared, we did all our things. We flew into Madrid, and then we spent a couple days in Madrid just getting acclimated to the time and all that. And I just remember being so embarrassed, like walking around Spain in like hiking gear.
Yeah, because really you have to carry everything with you on the Camino. And so basically you're wearing this huge backpack with everything with you, and you have to carry it. And so you don't want to carry anything extra because that adds to the weight of your pack. And even something like a pen or a pack of napkins, or it all has weight, and it really adds up when you're carrying a 25-pound pack for 20 miles a day up the Pyrenees Mountains. Like, you really notice.
Yep.
Like 0.2 ounces in your pack.
Yeah. I mean, I think my pack weighed what, like 23 pounds? Or wait, was I at like, I somewhere between 19 and 23. Wasn't yours like 26 or 27?
Mine was 26.5 when we started.
Okay. And this is the other thing that blew my mind. Like, as we were hiking, I started thinking about, you know, like 10, how many years, whenever, like when I, after I graduated high school and I lost 60 pounds, and I could feel the weight of my pack and how it hurt my body. And I could not believe just the experience of carrying all of that extra weight, how hard it is on your body. So I was just, that's something like a tangible way for me to think about it, which was crazy. I mean, everything counts. So we were in Madrid, and then we made our way to Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. And I think when we got to Saint-Jean, we were both like, no, we need to send some stuff home. And I think we both sent boxes of things home from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. I think I had like, I don't know, I feel like I had an extra like 3 pairs of shoes or something, like ridiculous. So we sent some stuff home. I remember one of us had to pay like $80 for like the box of like stuff to send home.
Yeah, it was international shipping from like a really small village in France.
Yeah.
It was super expensive, and it takes like 2 or 3 weeks to get back.
Yeah. So okay, so that was our night in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, which was beautiful. That place is so cute. So we wake up in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. We're getting ready to go. And like, it's our first morning. We have all of our stuff packed. We're like ready to take off on our first day of the Camino. And so we're having breakfast at this cute place that we stayed at. This like amazing.
Which was included.
Our breakfast. Our breakfast was included in the cost of the hotel, which I guess I had been to France before, but I remember it was like $17, and I thought that was expensive for like breakfast. But they brought us all these like little pastries and like
little. So we sit down and it's like jams, butters, croissants, pastries, muffins, like all of that. And we're eating our croissants with our jam. I will never forget the look on Jasmine's face. She just looks around because they hadn't come back after giving us like water and coffee. And Jasmine's like, this is really nice, but can we get a menu?
And I remember you were like, I think this is it.
I just remember, I don't know why I knew that that was it, because, you know, in France, that's really what they eat for breakfast, is just like a few pastries or whatever, and that's it.
Yeah,
and I was I think this is it, Jasmine. And the look on your face, you were like, are you serious?
Yeah, I'm like, I wanted like eggs. I wanted to like fuel up. Like we were doing this thing, but no.
We were climbing the mountains.
Yeah. So that was our first day. So it was 6 miles up. And I remember, so Orison, you could either stay at Orison or you could go like a full 17 miles and stay at like Roncesvalles, I think, which is the first town in Spain from France. But I remember you really wanted to stay in Orison because you were reading about it, and it was this little albergue. An albergue is a pilgrim's hostel at the top of the mountain. And I am so glad that we stayed in Orison. First of all, it was like the most beautiful place in the world, like on top of the Pyrenees Mountains. It was insane.
Yeah, I remember we were debating whether or not to stop because, you know, it was only, I think, 6 miles.
Yeah.
And you had to make a reservation like months in advance because, you know, it was a very popular stop if you didn't want to do the whole climb that in one day. And I said, maybe because it's our first day, maybe we shouldn't just do 20 miles. We should do 6 and just stay and see what happens. And so we made the reservation. Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy we did because that's where we met most of our friends that we traveled this whole journey with. Like, I feel like we met like 90% of the people that we were walking with there.
Totally. And we still talk to like most of them. Like and the thing about the Camino that's so beautiful, and it started here, is like you arrive at your destination at, you know, noon, 2-3 o'clock, and you literally have nothing else to do. You wash your clothes. So this was the first time we like washed. We hand wash our clothes, or I think there might've been a washer and dryer. Hung our clothes to dry. Okay. And then it was like, literally, there's nothing else to do. And so we were in this little place, like drinking coffee. You just hang out until dinner. And so it's like, what do? You get to know people. So we started playing games with people and just like met a bunch of people. Like I was texting one of our friends 2 days ago that we met, like they just had their second baby, like after the Camino. It's pretty cool. And so we really connected with people.
And then we had a group dinner, which was everyone who was staying at the albergue, which I think it was probably like 35 people. So we all had to sit in a huge like banquet style like room for dinner. And we all sat, I think there was two or three like large tables that went all the way across the room?
I think it was two.
And then they like served us dinner. And we had to go around the table and say where we were from, how many Caminos we've done, a little bit about yourself. And so we were like forced to talk to this huge group of people about why we were doing the Camino, where we're from. And we really got to know a lot of really amazing people from that. And I thought that was really special.
That was really cool. And then we slept our first night in the albergue. And so I think our room had like so bad. I was enraged. I was so mad.
Oh, Jasmine has this huge thing that she talked about for so long before we went about the people who snore, and that she cannot sleep if there's people who are snoring. And I think they're called roncar is how they say it in Spanish. And the first night we had, I think he was below you, right?
Oh, I was in a bunk bed and he was sleeping beneath me. Yeah.
And it was like window shaking loud snoring.
It was so bad. It was so bad.
And I remember looking at you and your eyes were so big and you were like, I don't know what to do. And there's nothing you can do.
You can't do anything. You can't go anywhere. Like literally there's nothing.
You're stuck.
So we woke up in the morning and we're like, okay, today's like it's a really big day. We were going to go. And so we have these guidebooks that we used. And so we had planned out like where we were going to stay. So we had 13 miles to go this day, like over the Pyrenees, which like, in the movie, the way like somebody dies on the Pyrenees, it's like intense. And so we are like gearing up for our day and they like serve us breakfast. And so we walk out to breakfast. And what is for breakfast? Oh my gosh.
Toast.
Like
two pieces of toast.
Seriously, just bread and butter. And I was like, we have 13 miles to hike and like no food. Like that's it.
They did give us a bocadillo, is what they call them?
Yep.
Bocadillo.
which is like a piece of French bread with like a, it's like a piece of meat in it, right? And like sometimes
yes.
We had 13 miles to hike. Oh my gosh. So that morning, I mean, that day was, we couldn't see where we were going. It was freezing.
It was really scary. So we started, we got to like the top of the mountain and like we started not being able to see the yellow arrows because it was so foggy and it was so cold. I literally had everything, every piece of clothing that I had brought with me. I had three outfits. I was wearing like thermal underwear. I was wearing my pants, two pairs of pants, three pairs of shirts, my jacket, everything, like all three pairs of my socks. And I was still freezing cold. Like I thought I was going to die. It was so cold. And we walked, I remember that's when we, was that when we met Clemencia?
We met Clemencia at Orison. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we come walking up and here's Clemencia and she's wearing shorts and a t-shirt. She is, to be fair, she's like a survivalist training, like wilderness survivor guru.
Yeah, she teaches like outdoor education.
Yeah. So I walk up and she's just trotting along in her shorts and t-shirt. And I was dumbfounded. I was like, Clemencia, how are you not cold? And she's like, this is not cold.
Oh my gosh. It was miserable.
So I remember it was so foggy. We could barely see in front of us. And there were these wild horses that would just come. They would become visible. Like once you were like 3 or 4 feet from their face and you would just start walking. And then all of a sudden there's this black stallion staring you in the face.
Oh my gosh.
And I have some amazing photos.
Yeah. We could hear like sheep, like somewhere in the distance. It was crazy.
Animals everywhere.
Everywhere.
And so at one point we thought we were lost because we had been walking for so long and there was no yellow arrows. And when you don't see yellow arrows for a while, you start to think, hey, maybe we're not on the right path.
Yeah. I mean, we're in like the middle of the map. But the good news was we had like other people with us, thank God. But it was pretty freaky. Like it was scary.
Yeah. And I can understand how people get lost up there. And, you know, it's so cold. And if you're lost and you don't have any food, like you're done.
Yeah. And I think in the movie, spoiler alert, somebody like falls off the cliff because they can't see because it's so foggy. So you have like this in your mind while you're going.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving along. So we walked 13 miles that day to Espinal, and like, I don't think we ever got warm. And I believe that our clothes did not dry. Like we washed our clothes overnight and we had to wake up in the morning and put on wet clothes and go back out into
the world. That was the coldest place I think I've ever stayed.
Ever. It was awful.
Ever.
It was so cold. Like we couldn't get warm.
And it was someone's house, I think.
Yeah.
And we were in, you know, in our room and I was under all, I had all my clothes on still. I was underneath the covers and I was like, I had icicles from my nose.
Oh my gosh. It was so cold.
It was like that cold.
Yeah. And the thing about, so this was a theme throughout our experience of the Camino is like in Spain, they do a siesta. So nothing is open for dinner until like sometime between 7 and 8. And usually we would arrive at these places, we would do our laundry, put on like our second pair of clothes, and then go try to find food. But like nothing would open until 7 o'clock. So we would literally have to wait until 7 o'clock to get food. And so, and we were always like starving and ready for bed, but we had to wait for food, which is fine. I mean, I think it's beautiful that they do this. And so finally by 7 o'clock, the like only restaurant in town opened up and we went in, ate our dinner, went to bed, and then we were off the next morning. And the thing about like starting where we started and then like following kind of the guidebooks is like everybody's kind of on the same track. So you kind of you're like leapfrogging your friends. So you see your friends everywhere. So I think the night after this, we ended up staying with some of our friends. So it was day 5 that we went over like our first mountain pass after the Pyrenees. And it was on day 5 that I really hurt my knee. And I was wearing trail running shoes. I wasn't wearing my hiking boots. And because I believe it's because I didn't have like the ankle support, like the stability of a hiking boot, I really hurt myself. And so I had to wear
going down.
And I had to wear a knee brace. Yeah,
going down was brutal.
Yeah. I had to wear a knee brace for the rest of the Camino after that day, which was crazy. But then we, Let's see. So then we kind of like we arrived at this other hotel that where we were able to have our own room and bathroom, which is like you don't even realize how amazing it is to have your own bathroom. It's like so exciting. So it was the next day that we met one of our friends who ended up finishing the Camino with us a couple weeks later that we ended up like kind of creating this like really strong bond with. And it was so funny the way that things happen on the Camino because remember we were going to stay at that other hotel.
We had booked a hotel and made a reservation, which you should do like, you know, a day before or the day of in the morning, just so you can make sure that they have a place for you. And so we booked this place and I think it was like, I don't remember how much it was, but so we show up, we get there and they told us that our room was like way more expensive than what we had booked it as. And so just out of principle, we were like, let's go. Like, we're not going to stay here. And we were forced to find another place. And that place that we found is where we met one of our really good friends that we met on the Camino. And so it was fate.
Yeah, and we probably wouldn't have met him. Totally. We wouldn't have met him if like that didn't happen. And that was Estrella, right? Was the name of the town?
Yeah.
That was day six. Okay, so a lot of what happened kind of in the beginning was just kind of like waking up, walking. Like I think it was we sent more stuff home about a week in because we were both like dying. Like it was so hard.
I remember walking probably the first week, it was every single day. By the time we got to where we were going, my legs and my back and just everything hurt and was sore. And every time I went to bed the night before, I thought, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do this tomorrow. Like my body just won't do it. But we woke up and it was like nothing had happened because your body kind of acclimates. If you're doing that every day, your body just adapts to it and it's like, okay, let's do it again.
Yeah. I think like, I remember for me day eight. So day eight was the day that we walked into a town called Logroño and we went 17.3 miles that day. And I remember that was for me the worst day probably of my, well, not of my life, but it was the worst day of the Camino. I was miserable. And when you're walking into these towns, a lot of the time it's like you can see the town coming. It's like, the Holy Grail. It's almost like I feel like there's a scene where like something looks like it's coming, but it's like you keep walking and it just like it doesn't get any closer. Like it feels like it's just forever away.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Because you can see it and you're still walking like hours to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we arrived in Logroño and I remember like, that was my worst day, but like after that, I couldn't believe how strong my legs were. It was like it took me about a week, and then after that, it was no problem. Like every day, my body was like, yep, we're doing this. You do just like you totally acclimate. Your body totally understands what you're doing. And the good thing about this is so every night for dinner, everywhere you go has something called like a pilgrim's meal for dinner, and they do it for lunch too, which is like a four-course meal. And I'm sorry, this is my kind of vacation where you can literally eat as much food as you want and there's like no consequences. Like as many of these like fudge filled sugar cookies that I got, I had them every single day.
And you know, you're walking 20 miles a day and you think you'd lose weight, but you're eating so much because you're trying to replace these calories that you're burning.
Yeah. So it just kind of balances out.
I thought I would lose a bunch of weight on the Camino.
Yeah.
And I ended up probably gaining 5 pounds, which,
oh my gosh,
looking back on how much I ate was not a lot.
Well, and so for lunch and dinner, you get like, what is it? 4 courses. So you get bread.
Yeah.
And then you get to pick an appetizer, which is either like pasta or a salad or like, you know, like a full size meal for an appetizer. And then you get your main course, which is like, I got pork a lot.
Fish, pork.
Yep. And then you get dessert and you get a bottle of wine.
A whole bottle of wine. And it was like $8.
Yep. €8 for a pilgrim's meal. And I don't drink. And so did you and Michael like drink a bunch of my wine? I didn't even get
it. Yeah.
So you guys could drink my wine.
We would drink both of ours and then we would share yours.
So that doesn't help like calorie wise.
No, it's like 1,000 calories in a bottle of wine.
Oh my gosh, so funny.
But also, we get there at 4 and we're eating like at 6 or 7, and then we stayed up. So it's not like I was drinking a bottle of wine in like an hour. We would just sit and talk and play cards for hours and hours and hours.
It was like so, and this is what I'm talking about, is like we literally had nowhere to be, nothing to do, sitting there wearing the same clothes every single day, just like literally spending. It's like you arrive at your destination at like 2 or 3, maybe, wash your clothes, and then you have like 4 hours until you can even eat dinner. And so it's like you just sit and, well, actually most places we went to, we would like get dressed and stuff and go walk around, because a lot of the places we went to had like amazing cathedrals or like castles or something. Like we would walk around and explore wherever we were because they were always really cool towns.
Yeah, we saw so many cathedrals. I think every town had a cathedral or some kind of church that had like a history. And, you know, our guidebook would tell us, hey, there's this really cool thing in this town. You should probably look at it or go visit. And so we would like map out all the little things we wanted to do in each town.
Yeah, you were really good about that. Like you knew, like you would talk about the history and what happened there, because you could walk through, you could walk past things and not necessarily know what you're looking at. And so that was a really cool thing to have the guidebook that would tell us.
Oh yeah, I remember we used to read every night before about what we were going to do the next day.
Yeah.
So we had like a plan.
Yep. Yeah. And like we would plan out like where we were going to stop, like if we were going to, maybe not like for lunches and stuff, but like, oh my gosh, we would just like, we would stop so many times and like drink the most delicious cafe con leche, like constantly. It was so amazing. But that was our days, is like we would just walk and then we would just sit and like spend time together and then walk and then sit and eat and then walk. And like, you literally like have nothing to do.
And you're walking through these gorgeous countrysides, like just the most amazing views.
Yeah, it was insane. It was so beautiful. We went over 3 mountain ranges. Okay, so we went, let's see, we went to, I think it was from Boadilla that we went to Burgos. So Boadilla was like, so Logroño was my worst day. Boadilla was one of your worst days. Like you hurt your foot, I think. And so Boadilla was it Boadilla? No, it was,
yeah.
No, it was, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the name of it. The place that was,
I like, forgot it on purpose.
It was the place that was creepy.
It was very creepy. And I felt like very out of place there. And I felt like a lot of people were just looking at us like we weren't supposed to be there. I got a very, it was almost a negative vibe from the people that lived there. It was kind of like that movie, Inception, where they're in the dream and then everyone in the dream realizes that that person is not supposed to be there and they all just kind of stare at that person. It was very uncomfortable and my foot was excruciatingly hurting and I was like walking on my little walking sticks and we had to walk all the way through the town. But the albergue or the place that we wanted to stay at was on the complete other side of the town from where we entered.
Yeah. And like, I kind of get it because you see these other people that are so disrespectful, you know, but it's like, I don't know, but most places we went, they loved us as pilgrims. Like it was a part of their world. Like people kept giving me flowers and like, it was kind of just a weird place. And I remember our hotel was not our favorite place. So in the morning, my knee was still hurting. Your foot was still hurting. And because you're like leapfrogging with your friends, like it was more important to us to catch up and like stay on track than to like wait. And we also didn't have time to like to wait and then start again in the morning. And so we decided to just take the bus to the next town, which was Burgos, which Burgos is a huge city. The Burgos Cathedral was like going to be one of the 7 wonders of the world. It's ridiculous. It's so beautiful. And that's where we met up with our friend, Michael. So we went to Burgos and we ended up spending two nights there. So normally we would stay one night. And so we wanted to explore the city and relax. And I got a pedicure, which was a horrible idea because I had blisters after that. But that was a really like beautiful place to spend time.
And it was like our first time being in like a bigger city.
Yeah.
After having walked through all of these like really medieval towns, and it was our first like big city. So we were excited to get a hotel room, and you know, Jasmine got her pedicure. Was that the town we got massages in too?
I think we did. Yeah, we had somebody come to our hotel room and give us massages.
And it was desperately needed.
Yeah. So when we left Burgos, that was when we started like something that we'd heard people talk about forever, which was the meseta, which is like this really long, hot, no shade desert, like difficult part of the Camino. So the Camino kind of has chunks. It's like you go through these different regions of Spain and they're all really different. So the meseta was like one that people didn't love. It was like a really, and they were really long days because there was lots of space between. And so our first day, Burgos to Hontanas, was 19 miles and it was awful.
It was over 90 degrees. I remember my foot was still hurting like towards the end of this, but we were walking and there's no shade for, I think, 7 miles, you said?
Yeah. So like a huge part of it is just completely in the sun.
And they warn you in the guidebook, like, bring water. It's going to be hot. There's nothing for 7 miles. And so, you know, I thought we had prepared for that. So here we are walking through. It's like 95 degrees, I would say. And we have our huge 20-something pound packs on and we're hiking and it's open. There's no shade. I ran out of water. Like, I had two huge like liter cans for water and they were both gone. Jasmine had barely like, I don't know, probably 15 ounces of water left in her can. And since it was so hot outside, I was literally getting dehydrated and I asked Jasmine, like, do you have any water left? And she's like, I have a little bit. And I'm like limping on my walking sticks and like sweating because you have to wear sun protection. So your whole body is covered and it's hot and you are sweating and you're walking. And Jasmine hands me her water bottle and it was literally like drinking boiling hot tea water.
Like, so refreshing.
You could have made chamomile tea with that. And I just remember I think I had mild heat stroke and I was getting dizzy. And like, Hontanas is somewhere where you can't see it coming up because it's in a valley. And so you literally walk up to basically a cliff and you look down on the town. And so for us, it looked like an endless desert. And I was literally losing hope. And by the time we got there, I was like dragging my foot. And there was this little, I don't even know what it was. It was like this little stone hut, like right when you get there at the beginning. And I walked in and it was the first shade we had had for a long time. And I remember feeling like such a spiritual, like, that was like my first big spiritual thing where I was like, I felt like I was going to die. And right when I needed it, there was this hut with shade and there was a water fountain in there. And it was like a bench where you could rest. And it was everything I needed at the immediate time that I needed it.
Yeah, that was brutal. This is just an example of some of the ways that the Camino pushes you beyond like what you think you can do or what you want to do, like your comfort zone. That was brutal. And like, it was scary. Like, you're literally out in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing around, nowhere to get water.
Nothing. I really thought like I was going to die. That was the thoughts in my head. Cause I was like, I couldn't walk. I was limping. And it just reminded me about all of these stories from history from, you know, I grew up in a Catholic family and it was all these stories from the Bible, you know, where you're traveling across deserts and, you know, you're dehydrated and you're almost on your deathbed. And then boom, something's right there, your oasis or everything that you need saves you. And I felt very saved. And I don't know who I was saying thank you to or what happened, but I was very grateful. And it was super humbling. It was probably like one of the most memorable things that I do remember because it was such a tragic like day for me and it ended well.
Yeah, it was. And the part where we couldn't see it, like we were walking and we were just like, are you kidding me? Like it looked like the like flatness just went forever and there was nothing. And then all of a sudden it was like, boom, the town. And the place we stayed at there was brand new, I think. And it was super nice. And I actually remember, I think I went out for dinner without you because you were like miserable. You didn't want to go anywhere.
I was sick.
Yeah.
I think I had like heat stroke.
Yeah.
I could not get out of my bed.
Yeah. But then the next day, you were fine.
Fine. It's crazy. It is insane. Like all you need is a little sleep and you're ready to go.
Oh my gosh. So the next morning, we get up super early when it's still dark and we go to this place called Boadillo. And actually, so our friend was with us in Burgos and he like went off ahead of us. And so we had been alone again for a couple of days and we made another friend in Boadillo and like walked around and there was just like these beautiful white stallions everywhere. It was ridiculous. And there was like just a lot of history in this place, in this beautiful cathedral, but it started getting super stormy. It started like pouring rain. And most people went to mass every day. We did not because a lot of people on the Camino were Catholic, but we weren't there for the mass. But I remember it started like pouring rain. And so we were like, well, let's go like check out the church. And so we go in and like we sat kind of in the back and like the mass had started. And then we realized it wasn't mass. It was a funeral and we were dressed horribly and like totally
soaking wet.
Oh my gosh. I freaked out.
Clothes.
Yeah. I was like, this is so disrespectful. Like we have to, and they're used to it, right? Like there's pilgrims every day that come into these little cathedrals, but I was wearing just like a little tank top and like my yoga pants and just like, I felt horrible that we totally crashed a funeral.
It was really embarrassing.
It was really embarrassing. So we like rushed out of there. I don't think they really thought anything of it, but I felt really embarrassed.
I know. And there was a point where we were sitting down and they were doing the mass. And I looked at Jasmine and I said, can we get up and leave right now? Would that be even more disrespectful?
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad.
So we had to go back out into the storm.
Yeah. And the place we stayed at, I remember the place we stayed at, there was like a bunch of people and I left my boots outside in the rain. And in the morning, my boots were soaking wet and I wanted to take a bus or something to the next town. And I remember the guy that owned the albergue was like, no, you're walking. Like, nope. And so we sat there. He got like a hair dryer and like a bunch of like newspaper and we like sopped up a bunch of the water and sat there with a blow dryer and like dried my shoes for like, I don't know, hours, an hour.
Yeah. It was over an hour.
It was a long time. And then we decided to walk, which I'm glad we did. I mean, we definitely skipped parts of the Camino, which I don't feel guilty about it. I feel like we did most of it. And part of the Camino is doing like what feels right to you, like following your intuition and like doing what you feel like you wanted, what you're called to do.
And your journey.
And it's your journey. Like some people are really particular about not walking any of it, but we didn't have that feeling.
At first we did. We were like, we're not quote unquote cheating. We're not going to, you know, we're going to walk the whole 500 miles. We're not going to take buses. We're not going to ship our packs. So there's this one service they offer where you can give them your backpack and they'll ship your backpack to your next town and leave it, you know, where you can pick it up. And then you don't have to walk with your backpack. And a lot of people will do that if they, you know, if they're older and they can't carry their pack or if they had a really bad day or in Jasmine's case, if you're, you know, if your feet or your knee hurts really, really, really bad, it's good to take one day off where you can ship your 20-pound pack to your next location. Didn't you do that one time?
I did that one time. I did it. Yeah. And my knee was like way better after that. And I'm really glad I did that.
So you have to make sacrifices and, you know, kind of change your agenda or change your mentality of not everything that you want to happen is going to happen the way that you want it. And that's true in life as well. You have to, you know, roll and adapt with the cards you're given.
Yeah, totally. So we did end up walking from Boadillo. And I remember the next time we went to, we both, like neither one of us had slept well the night before. we were exhausted, and we splurged or something. We got like a nicer place. We were like, we need to sleep really well tonight. So we got a hotel. And then we get to our room, and there's like a party like right outside our window, like literally like a huge extended family.
No, it was the whole city. The whole city. It was like Mardi Gras.
Oh my gosh.
The whole town was up all night drinking, partying, music, like loud music. And Jasmine and I, it's like, you know, we went to bed early, like at 8 o'clock, and we were like in our pajamas or, you know, whatever clothes we were sleeping in. And we get into bed to go to bed, and like all of a sudden this loud music starts literally right outside our window.
We were so mad. I remember we took a video, and in the video you were just like laying on the bed, just like shaking your head. And we're like, oh, but we can't, there's like nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do.
And they were going till about 4 a.m.
Yeah, and that's how they do it in Spain. Like, they don't start dinner usually like until 11. They stay up super late.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was rough. So the next day, it gets even worse.
I know where you're going to go.
Mm-hmm. So the next day, we get to this little town, and we had made a reservation. And we ended up being in a room with these two girls from Germany. And so it was just the four of us in the room. And I'm pretty sure that we got in a fight this day. And I think that you went to bed before me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to bed really early, probably at like 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. Something happened at dinner. I don't know. It was one of those, we were just hanging out all day long, every day. And it was just like, we needed a break.
We were tired. Minute.
So I was like, I'm going to go to bed. I was like, I'll see you in the morning. And so I just went to bed, fell asleep, done. It was like 8 o'clock.
Until I woke him up I went to bed, and I've always been kind of paranoid about bed bugs. Like, I would go to sleep and like feel like something was crawling on me. And I would just kind of like brush my arm and be like, it's in my head, like it's nothing. So that happened this night. And I would kind of like brush my arm. Ugh, I'm like cringing talking about it. Went to brush my arm, and I felt something crawling on my arm. And I had an Indiglo watch. And so I pushed the little light and shined it on my arm. The biggest bug was crawling on my arm. And then I shined it in my bed, and there was like five of them like crawling in my bed. I freaked out. Oh, I like shined it up on the wall. You guys, they live in the wall. They were everywhere. The wall was moving.
Hundreds. Like, they were on their own pilgrimage across the wall.
And so I
don't know where they were going.
It was so bad. And you guys, so I go over to Marcus, who's sleeping, like I'm sleeping against like the one wall on the side, and you're sleeping against the wall that's like perpendicular or whatever. So I walk over to you and I shine my light on you, and it was like crawling on your hand. They were on you too, but you were like totally sleeping through it. And I like poked you. I'm like, Marcus, I think there's bed bugs. And you like, you were half asleep, and you were like, you should just look it up, like make sure they're bed bugs, like Google it.
I want to point out that it's like 11 o'clock. It is pitch dark everywhere. There's no lights anywhere in the room, outside. And we're in this like town in the middle of nowhere, and it is black dark everywhere. And we're in this room with these two girls. It's late to be like up, like the whole, every guest was asleep in the whole building. And so Jasmine wakes me up, and she had a terrified look on her face, and she's like, there's bed bugs. And I was like, are you sure? I was like, let's Google what a bed bug looks like. So we Googled it.
And most places would turn off the Wi-Fi at like 10 o'clock. And this place, like, they left it on, because otherwise we wouldn't have been able to. And I like Google a picture, and it's like exactly what's crawling on me, both of us. And you guys, I thought bed bugs were tiny. They are like huge. They're like the size of like ladybugs. Like, they are big bugs. I always thought they were like fleas, like tiny little things, but they are like big. And so most people,
what do we do?
Yeah. Like, what do we do? And so, oh my gosh, I just remember that was horrifying. I remember, I don't think you came with me, did you? Or did you come with me to go get the owner?
Yeah. So we tiptoed our way out through like where the regular albergue was. So it was kind of set up like a hostel. There was just like beds, like probably about 30 or 40 people in one room. And so we were tiptoeing downstairs and we had to go into the lobby, and Jasmine found the owner's daughter.
No, it was the owner. Right? It was him.
Oh, okay. The owner.
And I didn't know how to say bug in Spanish. I was just like, hay un problema en mi cama.
Yeah.
There's a problem in my bed.
You showed him a picture.
Yeah.
You showed him a picture.
Because I took a picture. That's right. I said, está en mi cama. And he like shook his head. He knew. He totally knew that there was a problem. He knew. And he was
trying. When they checked in, we asked for a private room and they said there was none available.
Earlier that day when we got there, we asked for a private room. Right. And they said there wasn't one.
And so we were freaking out. And so they said, okay, well, we have a room that we can move you to. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being a private room. And we were kind of upset that, you know, they did have a private room that they didn't tell us about. But I think looking back that they kept those open for people who did wake up to bed bugs, and they would move them into these private rooms to get them out of that room.
Yeah. So we like grabbed our stuff, and like the other two girls were kind of sleeping like on the other side of the bed, and there would literally have been nowhere for them to go. And so we just like grabbed our stuff and he took us to this room, and I had like bites all over me. He like, I don't even know. He like dumped like alcohol all over my back. Like, I don't, do you remember that? He was like dumping like liquid all over me. Like, I don't even know.
Some kind of, I don't know what it was.
Because I had bites all over my back. Like, they had been crawling on me and biting me for like a while before I woke up. Like,
they were eating you.
So gross. And so I remember when we were in our little room, you started doing a bunch of research and looking at like, okay, red flag number one, the sheets weren't white. The sheets had like little teeny tiny like flowers.
Oh yeah. But there was also like, if someone has bed bugs and you inspect, you can see like the little red blood dots of where they bite, and they'll just leave a little bit of blood there.
Yeah, you can see like signs of it.
Yeah, and we were so cautious. Every place we stayed before this, we checked like under the mattress, we checked all of the sheets, we checked like in the walls, because you can see kind of, I think they leave like droppings that you can kind of see, like a brown, like kind of, I don't know what, like you can tell usually if there's bed bugs. And we didn't check this time.
We didn't check. And probably because we were fighting. And the sheets had like little tiny flowers on them. And that was to like disguise the droppings. Yeah. Because if it was white, you would have been able to see. So here's a tip, you guys. If you're staying in a hotel room and they have white sheets, that's a very good sign. If there's little flowers on the bedding, look out. They might be trying to hide something. So in the morning, you know, that was probably the worst night of sleep I've ever had in my life.
And your biggest fear.
So let's like rewind a little bit. We totally prepared for this, by the way. Marcus soaked twin size sheets in like DEET, and we had so much like bug protective. Like, we had our own sheets that we were going to be sleeping on every night. We like packed and brought all this stuff with us, and it was too heavy. So we sent it home. I don't know if it would have helped actually, because they were in the wall, but like we were so worried about it, and it happened. And oh my gosh, here we are. Like, we totally survived. The next day was horrible, which we'll talk about.
Well, I remember one thing in the morning. They confronted us and they asked us which room we were in. And we went up there with the owners. There was two of them. And we walked into that room. And there was absolutely nothing there.
No sign.
They lifted up nothing. There was no bugs. Because, you know, they crawl back into the wall or back into wherever they came from. You can't. There was nothing. So they lifted up all the mattresses. There was nothing. They
Not a looked single on bug.
On the floorboards, on the wall, there was nothing. It was like it never happened.
Yep.
And they were like, oh yeah, there was bugs. Yeah, whatever.
They
didn't believe us.
they live in the wall. They totally live in the wall. And I always like look around in the bed. But like if you look at the wall was like this old like wooden wall that was totally like destroyed basically. That's where they live. They live in the wall. They don't live in the bed.
They crawled out through the wood. Ugh. Disgusting.
So in the morning, like, okay, how do you deal with bed bugs? You literally, you can't take them inside to your next hotel room with you. Like, what are you supposed to do? So you did a bunch of research, like, how are we supposed to deal with this? And we had to like make our way to the next town. So we made our way to Sahagun, and that's where our friend Michael was waiting for us. And we told him that we had bed bugs and we had to like deal with them. So we're walking around Sahagun, like trying to find out, like I wanted to take our clothes off in like the square and like bathe in the fountain or something. Like I didn't know what we were supposed to do. Yeah.
We got in a fight. So what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to heat up everything you have, your bag, your shoes, your clothes, everything that you brought. And so if it's hot out, you can put all of these things into black plastic bags and tie them up and leave them in the sun, and that will heat up whatever's inside to a temperature that will kill these bugs if they're on you, if you've taken travelers with you. And whatever clothes you're wearing, you're supposed to do the same thing with that. And so Jasmine was still freaking out, and she's like, hey, we have to do that right now. Let's do it in the middle of this square where there was a fountain, and there's all these restaurants around the whole fountain. Everyone sits outside at these tables, and we got in a little mini fight about it because I didn't want to derobe and put all of our clothes in bags in the middle of the square where everyone can see.
Like, it's so obvious what we're doing.
And then go have coffee in our underwear while we try to figure out where we're gonna take a shower. So I suggested maybe we just go to our next hotel, which was actually a hotel. It was a nicer hotel, and we explain to them. I don't know why everyone thought it was so funny that we had bed bugs. Everyone we told was laughing at us.
Yep.
Like, okay, we walked into the hotel and we said, is there somewhere we can wash our clothes, wash our bodies? Because the last place we were at had bed bugs, and we didn't know how to say bed bugs back then, but you say chinches. Chinches.
Yeah, we'll never forget.
And the guy at the desk was laughing at us, right? He was laughing. He thought it was funny. And he was
cracking
like
racking up. And I thought he was gonna like kick us out. I was terrified that we weren't gonna be allowed in. Like I was so scared.
So he ended up giving us plastic bags, or we had bought some, but it was very hot that day. So we put everything we had in these like black bags, and they had like a closed pool area in the back. So we had all of our bags on the grass outside, and there was a closed pool with like a locker room. And so there was nobody anywhere. So we were allowed to use the locker room and shower in hot water. And we had to take every piece of clothing we had and put it in these bags. So we were wearing like robes, and we had to just wait. I think our bags were out there for like 6 or 7 hours.
They had to cook for a minimum of 4 hours. And so
yeah,
we put we were able to like take all of our clothes off in like literally like a gym with like a cement floor. We were so lucky. Like it was perfect. We just like took everything off. We both had like our private little areas, put them in the garbage bags and left them outside to cook. It was perfect. Like it totally worked out. And then we just sat in our hotel room because I was wearing a towel for 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Then when we finally took our stuff out of these bags, I found 2 dead ones in the bottom of my bag. And so if we didn't do that, they would have traveled with us.
Yeah. I had one, I think, in my bag. It was crazy.
Dead.
And then we washed all our stuff, and then we were off again. It was like, that was like, talking about it is so funny. It was awful. Like it was a really horrible
experience. Bad.
Yeah. It was bad. Like super stressful. I mean, I felt like, I think when we got to the town, we ended up having lunch too, because we were like hungry, and were just like infested. Like you just feel so gross because you know you're carrying this stuff around and you're like, oh my gosh, like what are we supposed to do? Like, I don't know how to deal with this. It was bad.
But we got through it.
We totally did. And it's like such a funny story. And then that night it was like, and then we had, so our friend Michael was with us and he had like his feet were super swollen and he had really, really horrible blisters. Like the whole bottom of his foot was like huge blisters. So we went to like the doctor with him and like he doesn't speak any Spanish. And so you and I, like, I'm better at speaking it. You're better at understanding it, I think. And so like with both of us as a team, I feel like we did pretty well, like, but having to go like deal with medical issues. And this is part of what makes the, it was rough, but this is part of what makes the Camino so beautiful is like we created this little like almost like a family unit and it was like ride or die. It was just like, we just took care of each other and we went through these, like we're sitting at dinner and his feet are all swollen and we had just dealt with bed bugs, but we're like with our friends and like having this like, you know, four course dinner, just like laughing and spending time together. It was like, it's amazing. It's really amazing. It's a really magical experience to be in community and be so close to other people and feel supported and loved as you like deal with these like things that are not fun.
That you wouldn't deal with in your normal life.
Well, yeah, of course. But like you take care of each other. Like it's just this human connection that's like amazing.
Yeah.
And then we had our other friend. So we had another friend from Germany, Christian. And so the four of us hung out and then we went to León, which I think León is my favorite town on the Camino. So we arrived in León and I wanted to like splurge. And so I ended up getting a hotel room at what's called a Parador, which is an old monastery that they turned into like a luxury hotel. So I got a room at the Parador, which was just like, I felt like royalty. It was beautiful. And the four of us just like played cards like out in like the courtyard of this Parador until like God knows when in the morning, just like laughing and just like literally, I mean, we spent like hours and hours and hours together, just like having so much fun playing the same card game over and over and over and just being
learning
together.
German.
Learning German with like nowhere to be. Just like spending time. It was so, and we ended
telling
up
stories.
Telling stories. And like, we ended up going to visit both of them in Germany. So we visited Christian.
Yeah.
He lives in Cologne. So we went to visit him too. And then Michael lives in Munich. So like, we made these like amazing, like super deep connections with these friends on the Camino because it's kind of an experience like, unlike anything, like you develop this camaraderie because you're both in this thing together, which was really cool.
It's almost indescribable, like what kind of experience.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, you really wouldn't know unless you go do it, which I highly suggest. I want to do it again.
Yeah, me too. So we're in León, and like, I remember the morning that I woke up in my Parador. I remember I had like this ridiculous buffet breakfast, and I wanted to go for a walk, and I heard what I thought sounded like cats, like meowing really loud at this park behind my hotel. And I walked into this park and there was literally like nobody around. And there were all these peacocks like running around. It was unreal. And so I think we all met up that day and then we went back and like, I mean, it was just another day that we decided to like hang out in León. And so we just like literally sat in this park, like playing cards for hours. And like, there's these like huge ducks and like peacocks. It was like, seriously, it was like nothing. Like we literally weren't doing anything, but it was so fun just to be together. It was ridiculous.
And all the peacocks, I remember there was probably like 20 of them and they were all running around in this park, but it was all open. They were just like wild peacocks and they're all screaming at each other and chasing each other around.
Oh my gosh. And so loud, like that noise they made.
So loud.
I'd never heard that before.
Me neither.
It was really cool. Oh yeah. And there was a teeter totter. Remember we like rode on the teeter totter.
It was like the most entertaining thing we had done in so long. And we were laughing so hard on a teeter totter.
Oh my gosh. It was so fun. And we were I think we planned on spending two nights in Leon, maybe to rest. I think maybe because Michael's feet were swollen. I can't remember.
But, well, and also to see the city, because the bigger cities, we wanted to, you know, spend an extra day just to see.
Yeah.
Everything that was there.
Yeah. And they had a bunch. There was like a bunch. There was another cathedral in Leon and like a lot of stuff to see there. And so I think after spending two nights there, we woke up in the morning and it was like we were having breakfast, like all packed up, ready to go on the Camino. And a bunch of people were like gearing up and they had their like ponchos and stuff. But it was like not only pouring, it was like thundering and lightning, like bad. And we were like, no, no, we're not going to go like walk in that. We just like chose not to. So we stayed another day in Leon, just like sitting inside because it was pouring rain.
It was torrential downpour. And there were all these pilgrims that just put on like a little plastic bag and two little plastic bags on their shoes. And they just went out to the middle of this field, like where the path led to. And I know open fields are not good when there's lightning and thunder and you're carrying two walking sticks.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, I'm not prepared, like with all the rain gear. I didn't want to get wet and struck by lightning. So
yeah, me neither.
We stayed.
We stayed another day, and it's so funny because when you arrive in Leon, they have like a garden type of thing that has like the date and flowers. And so we took like a picture when we got there, like all excited, like to be there. And then when we left, we took another picture, and we were all like had these like faces of like oopsie because we were there for like so much longer than we thought we were supposed to be there. It was really funny, but we ended up. We were going to the next town we went to was Astorga. And I remember we wanted to walk part of the way. Like we didn't want to take a bus the whole way, but we like it was too far to walk. And so we needed to catch up. And the bus driver, like, he wouldn't stop and let us out halfway. So we ended up taking the bus all the way to Astorga, which was kind of a bummer, but like Astorga was one of my favorite places too. Like we got off the bus, I think it was 8 o'clock in the morning, and we literally the entire day again. This is like day four in a row of literally just like sitting around together with like nowhere to be.
Yeah. So
we got our hotel room, and outside of our hotel room was a castle, like the most beautiful building I feel like I've ever seen. Just like
it was
literally,
a Gaudi, wasn't it?
It was a Gaudi castle. Like, or maybe it was a cathedral, but it was a castle.
It was
just like front row, like right outside of our window. It was so beautiful. This place was like crazy. And then we went to like the chocolate museum. It's like we literally had nowhere to be. And we just would like move from like coffee shop to coffee shop and drink coffee and play cards until it was like appropriate for you guys to start drinking. And then it was like, again, just like more cards and food and crackers and cookies and just like sitting around. It was so fun though. It was so much fun. Like the three of us together, I felt like we made such a perfect little match. Like I was kind of like the serious, like composed, and you were like the goofball. Actually, you and Michael like played off of each other really well. He's a big goofball too, but it just like, yeah. It just worked. Like the three of us just like flowed. Like we were able to just have so much fun together. Okay, so when we left Astorga, we had read about this place where you could ride horses up the side of like, because we crossed three mountain ranges, and like one of them you could ride horses up. And so we decided we were going to do that because both you and Michael had never ridden a horse before, right?
Yep.
And that was like magical. That was like ridiculous. Like we were riding up this beautiful mountain, and like at one point a bunch of like cows with like horns, like a herd of like 20 cows, they were bulls, like came like running down the hill. It was crazy. It was really, really beautiful.
My horse kept trying to stop and eat, and you're not supposed to let them, and my horse just was not having it. He would just turn, stop, yeah, and eat every 5 minutes. But I was okay when we were going up the mountain. It was like 30 euros or something. something really, it was very affordable. And I was like, I was not expecting it to be a 2-hour horse ride up a huge mountain.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be, you know, 30 minutes or whatever. And it was a huge, it was beautiful. You're like, well, I mean, you're seconds from death if your horse slips off the cliff. But
yeah.
The path was very narrow. And sometimes I felt like, oh my God, this could be the end if my horse like lost its footing.
Yeah, it was scary.
But the horses do that. They've been doing that for years every day. So yeah. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. And the guy that owns the horses has been doing it like their whole lives. And he takes like really good care of them. And they only take like one trip a day. And like it was really beautiful. And that town, I feel like I've said this so many times already, but I think Osobrera was like one of my favorite. It's in a region called Galicia, which feels kind of like Ireland. Really cold, super green. Like, I think it has like Celtic roots. Like, I think it was,
yeah.
There's something about it that's different. It's like a new region that we went into.
But super green.
So green. So
you go beautiful. From desert into like beautiful green wetlands.
Yep.
Almost.
And I remember the food there was really good too. They have this like special like goat cheese with honey dish. I remember that's like making my mouth water right now talking about it. But it was just another like you feel like you're in another country again. It's just like the adventure like never stops. It's like the food, the people, the view. It's just everything. It's amazing. It was amazing.
It's like all of your senses are just like on overload from the beauty and your spirit. Too. And you really, you know, you make connections and you find yourself and you find what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. I think it was only a couple of days after that, that we made it in to Santiago, which was, I remember that was a really long day. Like when we were walking into Santiago, I remember you walk like really far and then you get to the sign that says welcome to Santiago. And then it's another like few miles to get like actually into the city, into the cathedral. And that was like, that felt like a really emotional day to me, like for so many reasons that I didn't even know yet. But like walking into Santiago, you're like, oh my gosh, like we did it. Like we totally did it. We finished. Like, and then you get in and you find the cathedral. And we saw like all of our friends there, like all these people, like you all make it to the end and you see each other. It's just like, it makes me want to cry talking about it. It was a really beautiful experience. And we went to Mass, remember? So we went to Mass at the Santiago Cathedral and they did the burning incense where they like pass like the bell, like back and forth across the room. They have this giant bell that they wave like through the cathedral. It was really beautiful. It was really cool.
It's super emotional because, you know, you've been on this journey with these people and you become acclimated to that. That's like life now. And you've been doing it for over a month. And so mentally, physically, emotionally, you adapt to this journey. And then all of a sudden it's over and you have to go back home. And they talk a lot about the post Camino depression when you come back home and, you know, because you're back to real life. You're coming back to a different reality, and the Camino is so special, and it's such a connection with nature and other people, and it's just such a journey. And then you get home and you're just like, what happened?
Yeah, it's like it's a really jarring experience where you're just like, I remember all the clothes that I had. I was just like, I don't need all of this stuff. Like, I was so happy wearing the same outfit every single day. And the connections that you make with people, like, I missed you so much. It was like this deep loneliness and like emptiness. Yeah. And everybody feels it when they leave. Like when we took the train out of Santiago and said goodbye to Michael, like that was really sad. And then I think you and I, did we stay in Madrid another night? I think.
Yeah, we did.
I can't even remember. And then like we said goodbye and you went back to LA. It was so depressing. Like
I walked home from the airport. They tell you if you can to walk home from the airport to kind of cushion your reintroduction because you've been walking, used to walking for so long, and to kind of help with your arrival. So I did, I lived right, like probably 5 miles from the airport. So I did walk home from the airport, and it did help, but it gives you time to kind of think about coming back to reality and kind of what you've learned, and kind of gives you a little time to let go of that journey.
Yeah.
It's crazy even thinking about it now.
Yeah, I can't believe it was so long ago, but do you think, like, what do you think that you learned on the Camino?
I learned so many things, just how to deal with life, how to deal with hardships, how to be present in your life and just not distracted by all of these things that we have in our life that distract us now. I mean, we have phones and all of these apps and TV, and we have Twitter and Facebook and all of these social media apps, and then we're constantly bombarded by phone calls and ads, and it's just like nonstop. And that's one cool thing about the Camino, is like when you're out there, and we tried to do this too, we just completely disconnected. We had no phones unless it was like emergency or we were taking pictures, but everything was turned off. We would check in with our families like every week, you know, like every like Sunday we would text and be like, hey, we're still alive, like don't worry. But we just, you know, and you just completely disconnect, and you realize what true life is, and you don't need all of this extra, and you really don't need a lot of things, you know. Everything you have on the Camino, you're carrying with you. And sometimes we forget that we don't need all of these things to make us happy, and you just need connection with other people and learn lessons.
It's, yeah,
crazy.
I mean, I went in with this like super high expectation of, you know, I'm going to have this like solo experience. I'm going to do a bunch of writing, and like I had an agenda, but I wasn't in control of anything that happened. And I think one of the moments for me was like, I remember I wanted to have space from you. Like I told you from the beginning, like I need to have a solo experience. Like I want to spend time by myself. And then I think I lasted like 2 days, and I saw you in what, I can't remember the name of the town. Oh, Santo Domingo de la Calzada. I saw you in the town with like our friends, and I just like came back and I was like, can we get back together? Like it was the human connection. Like that is what I needed. And it was like, that's the experience that I was meant to have. And it brought me, I believe, like so much more than I planned on getting. I think what I planned on getting was this very like ego-centric experience of like, I'm going to overcome, I'm going to learn, you know, because I'm like a therapist and a coach and a teacher, and I want to like teach other people like how to do it or something. But what I learned was like the experience of the human connection, and like feeling a part of something, having fun, and like being in the moment and realizing that none of the things that I think are super important are important. It's like all of these little experiences, like one thing, I can't even believe how dirty I got on the Camino. I can't believe how many like bugs got in my food that I just like pushed to the side and kept eating, which is so gross. But I'm like, I would have never done that before. But it's like, you just get used to like, whatever, like come down from like my super, you know, sterile life experience, doing the things that I think I'm supposed to be doing, to just having this like genuine, authentic experience with my friends and like my community that brings me so much more joy. Like if somebody were to say, hey, why don't you like sit outside and play cards for 8 hours every day? I would have been like, no, that's not what I want. But it was like exactly what I needed. Cause when else in our lives do we have time to just be together and like, know that no matter what, like you have your community, and like you're going to wake up and you're going to hike or do whatever, but you just come back to like each other and the connection. And it was really amazing.
And just sharing stories and learning about people's lives. And, you know, how many times do you ask random people like, or are interested in what random people's lives are? Yeah. And you end up learning so much from these strangers.
Yeah. And like you said in the beginning, like most people do the Camino because they're in some sort of life transition or something like horrible has just happened to them. So you get to meet all these people who are on a super authentic journey. And like, you really get insight to this like human experience that we all have of like what brings meaning? Like what matters? How do we overcome like painful experiences? What is it that we're looking for?
How to grieve.
Yeah. How to grieve. And yeah, just like what's important. So that was our Camino experience. And I seriously, like, it's one of the greatest adventures I've ever had. And I went back because I wanted more of the experience. And it wasn't the same because it was that authentic, like original experience that was so powerful for me. So when somebody invites you to do something that may sound crazy, I hope you do it if it feels aligned for you. Hey guys, it's Jasmine. Thanks so much for listening to the Live Your Life podcast, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find the show notes and information about life coaching at jasminesavari.com. You can also find me on Instagram at Jasmine Savari. I am a life coach and a licensed mental health counselor, but this podcast is not a replacement for healthcare services. If you are in crisis, please call 911 or the Crisis Clinic at 1-800-273-8255. Take care and don't forget to live your life.